Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Talked about this before, but you have to have a really, I think, a great relationship with your insurance agent because you want to make sure trust is number one. They're going to get you the right insurance that you need, that you're covered. But also it's something that fits your budget, so you get it for the right price. I don't care if it's commercial, home, personal, business insurance, whatever it happens to be. And they cover the gambit. And then if there's something happens, you want that person to be your advocate to get it done. Purdy Insurance is an office filled with pros. An entire office filled with pros, which is the highest compliment I feel I can give somebody that works. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Time now for the play-by-play call of the day. Avery Bradley wins it for the Celtics.
6 seconds to go in a tie game. Smart against LeBron. Left side. Avery open. Three. Kicks in. With 1/10 of a second remaining. It hit every corner of the cylinder and the rim. It bounced in. The Cavs have to get the ball in the length of the floor. They won't. And the Boston Celtics have redefined stealing a playoff game. They come from 21 down on the 15th anniversary nearly of coming from 21 down to do the exact same thing they did in 2002. Steal Game 3 of the Eastern Conference Finals.
Sean Grand with the call on WBZ and the Celtics Radio Network. As last night, they stunned the Cleveland Cavaliers. Cavs still lead it 2-1. Pittsburgh Penguins are up 3-2 in their series. They won Game 4 in Ottawa. 3-2. They won yesterday, Game 5, 7-0. Very pleased to bring in Bob Grove. Bob, for many, many years on the Penguins Radio Network. Bob, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Oh, Steve, thanks so much. Great to be on with you.
All right. I want to start with the move to Murray. Sometimes you have to know the matchup that you have. I think a lot of people don't realize that Ottawa is a team that likes to play behind the net, and they like the stuff around the net. Murray's better at that than Fleury. Safe to say?
Well, Fleury certainly had. Look, one of the things that tipped you off that he was in trouble in Game 3 was his inability to get from one post to the other. Yep. They were trying a couple of wraparounds, and that was really kind of shocking because at times that's been an issue for him in his career, but not all the time. Yeah, Murray's got an economy of motion that's a little bit better, but I have to be honest with you. There were times last year in the playoffs when that was a little bit of an issue for him as well. Mm-hmm. I prefer, Steve, to go to the larger view of this, which is very simple. Mike Sullivan has more confidence in Matt Murray.
Yep.
He thinks he's the better goaltender, and the minute he had a chance to go back to him, he did. It's really that simple. And that's just the way he feels, and you know, like, you can't argue with the results. It was look, as I said at the time, this guy's brave. He doesn't worry about, you know, conventional hockey thinking, because typically mm-hmm. that's not what coaches would have done. And he's a man of his convictions, and he stood by them, and it worked out. Well, it's worked out so far.
Right. Well, 45 years ago, all right, remember Bob Greasy got hurt, and in the playoffs they brought in Bob Greasy to replace Earl Morrill in the Steeler game, the AFC Championship game. Well, he started Greasy in the Super Bowl and started all year. I mean, sometimes that trust thing comes into play, and you just go with the guy that you think gives you the best chance. Mike thinks at this point that's his best chance.
Exactly. He's a guy, and look, I mean, you can't argue that it wasn't successful and that it hasn't been. I mean, Matt Murray is a guy who just very calmly goes about his job and doesn't seem to get flustered. Not that Fleury did, but Sullivan's also looking at the big picture. Fleury's probably he's going to be gone after this season, and you know this is a way for him to demonstrate. And not only does he think this guy gives them the best chance at the moment, but it's the other side benefit he gets is another way to demonstrate to this kid that he's behind them 100%. You know, and he's thinking about the future.
Now let's take the next part. Matchups mean a lot. When Mike Sullivan worked with the lines and changed them up, what did it do to the matchups in the series?
Well, I'll tell you what. I mean, you know, Crosby's played a lot against Mathot and Carlson almost exclusively, and for the first three games there wasn't much there. But, you know, having a healthy body, having a rust to put back into the lineup has meant a lot for him because it's enabled him to get Sheary out of there. And as far as I was concerned, as long as Sheary and Gensel stay beside Crosby, it was going to be a problem.
Right.
And it wasn't as much of a problem in Game 4 because he pushed Sheary down the lineup. So I just think it's given the Penguins, and he's left that second line largely go. But here's the thing is, you know, Chris Kunitz has kind of an effect, has a way of kind of balancing things out for the Penguins. He's a guy who has helped them get to the front of the net because that's his game to begin with, and has helped to encourage the forechecking, the physical play. So I would just say that if you look at the whole scope of the way the lines have changed, it's opened up the Penguins to play not only the puck possession game that they need coming through the neutral zone, but then the forechecking game at the other end of the rink to make it work.
Obviously, Ottawa used its system in the first three games really well. I mean, their system with the center ice trap, everything that goes with it. What has changed, in your opinion, that's opened up the ice more for the Penguins?
What's changed for me is, I'll get back to it, the physical nature of the Penguins once they got in there. They didn't have any problem getting through in the first few games, but they weren't really translating that into zone time or puck possession. Once they got in, there were no second chances those first few games. That's changed. So they've started to get the mentality that every puck to the net, and we've got to get bodies to the net as well, and they've been much more physical. They've gotten in, you know, what I see them doing more and more is, once they commit to dumping it in, they've got a guy with some speed who's dedicated to go in and get that puck that they just dumped. So I think they've been doing it smart. They've been putting it in the right parts of the rink, and then they've had a guy to get in there and start the process. I mean, that shift, Steve, that shift of a minute and a half that led to the third goal the other game was the perfect example of the Penguins' competitive, physical nature, the way they're winning battles. That, you could argue right now, this is Game 5, the series is tied at 2, and yes, the Penguins already had a 2-0 lead, but the game wasn't out of reach.
That's right.
That shift may have turned the whole series. It just was incredible to watch.
Because you could see Ottawa thoroughly demoralized after that was over.
Exactly. I mean, that's nothing makes you feel worse as a hockey club than literally not even having enough puck possession to get the puck out over your own blue line and have the other team changing while it's going on. And then, oh, by the way, when it's over, the exclamation point is a goal on top of it. That's got to be hugely demoralizing to Ottawa.
The Penguins led the NHL in scoring chances in the regular season, about 10.5 per game. It's you know, until the last couple of games, it's been down to about 7.5 a game. Now, I know things tighten up more in the playoffs, but you mentioned the physical part of it. What have the defensemen meant to maybe translating to a few more scoring chances? Because they were down almost 3 chances a game until Game 5.
Right. So I would say 2 things lead to it. To your point, yes, you're right. The defensemen do mean a lot to it because they at times in these playoffs, Steve, they haven't been, for me, aggressive enough to pinch down once pucks and battles were going on in the zone. They were backing off a little bit, or they were late getting there. I see less of that now.
Agreed.
I see them being more aggressive. And so once they keep the play alive, it's good. But here's the other piece I'll add to that physical play is the back pressure from the Penguins. When they do lose a puck and the other team's coming out of their own zone, the Penguins forwards are all over them as they back check on their way back, and they're creating some turnovers, and that is really a hallmark of the game they were playing last year. So they've done both of those things, and they've been hugely important for them in the last couple of games.
Shorthanded part, I want to get to that. Ottawa, of course, it's been a long time since they scored a power play goal.
0-for-25.
Yeah, a long time. But what have the Penguins done to make sure that it continues to be 0-for-25?
Well, it's two things. It's not winning faceoffs because they're getting crushed in the circle, especially when they're on the penalty kill. It's been brutal the last few games, actually. So it's been bad. So what they're doing is they're getting in shooting lanes, they're blocking the shots, and then when there is a rebound, they're finding a way to get there first. And that's, again, you know, when I think about the whole way this series is going, Steve, it's the depth. Yes, the special teams have really turned it. The Penguins power play 5-for-9 the last three games. The Senators are 0-for-15 in this series, 0-for-25. So special teams have been a big piece of it. But the depth players that the Penguins use on the PK, guys like Rowney, guys like Cullen, they're better than the depth players from Ottawa. I think we knew this coming in, but I think it's really starting to show right now.
Yeah, I agree. The start, we know what the Penguins have done when they've scored the first goal. After they've played the last two games and going in there, what do you think psychologically it means for the Penguins to get the first goal in Game 6?
I think it's the start of the process of sending the message to Ottawa that the series is about to end. Right? That's the way you don't want to... Exactly. You don't want to give them any life and think that they can now send this back to Pittsburgh for Game 7. So the first goal is big in every game, but the minute the Penguins get ahead... Steven, we talked about this the last time I was on. They are not built to play from behind. It's very simple. They're not.
That's right.
They need to be in front. So the minute you get behind, trust me, everybody on that Ottawa team starts gripping the sticks tighter because they know now they've got to create goals. And instead of letting the game come to them and trying to counter and just find goals where they find them, they've got to go out and get them. And they better get them now before it becomes 2 or 3 nothing. So it's huge.
Yeah, because the Ottawa is, to me, the equivalent of the running team. Run, run, run. Now we're behind by 2 scores. Now we have to throw the ball to get back. It's not in their DNA to do that. Running teams, when they fall behind, they have to play with the lead. They have to dictate the tempo of the game and dictate the clock. Ottawa's like that in a hockey sense.
No, that's a very good analogy.
Yeah. Bob, thanks so much. It is always a pleasure. It's great to hear you.
Thanks, Steve. Great to be on. Thanks for asking.
You bet. Bob Grove. Joining us to talk about the Penguins, and they have Game 6 at Ottawa coming up tomorrow night. We'll come back with more in a moment. Matt Leon, final half hour, we'll talk about the Eagles, the Phillies, and the Sixers in the final half hour with him. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
If you're not insured with the Purdy Insurance Agency, you may not be getting the most out of your insurance coverage. Locally owned and family operated for over 90 years, the experienced team at Purdy will compare your rates and coverage among a number of nationally recognized insurers to make sure you're getting the most out of your insurance dollars. And once you join the Purdy family of customers, you'll experience service and claims handling that's second to none. Call 1-800-677-2478 to see what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
The phones are ringing off the hook at Sunbury Motors Hyundai because right now we're offering the best savings in Hyundai's 30-year history, like up to $6,750 in total savings on the 2017 Sonata. It's called the Better Than Ever Sales Event, and it features the biggest total savings ever offered on Sonata, Elantra, Tucson, and Santa Fe Sport. So there's never been a better time to buy than the Better Than Ever Sales Event. Every Hyundai is also backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain limited warranty. America's best warranty. So visit Sunbury Motors Hyundai now before the biggest savings in Hyundai's history are, well, history. Better is the reason to buy a Hyundai, and the Better Than Ever sales event is the reason to buy now. Sunbury Motors Hyundai is your home for, well, better. Better prices, better vehicles, and a better buying experience. Sunbury Motors Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza in Sunbury and online at sunburyhyundai.com.
Hyundai!
Great to have you with us on the show today. Matt Leon, final half hour. Thanks to Bob Grove joining us to talk about the Penguins in this half hour. Dan Baker, the outstanding public address voice of Citizens Bank Park, also for many years with the Eagles, the Palestra, hockey. He's done it all. Great to have him on. And Matt Leon in the final half hour. Penn State football. Well, let's do this in a little bit of order. Let's start with Penn State women's lacrosse. They've made it to the Final Four for the second consecutive year. They'll play Maryland in Foxborough at Gillette Stadium in the national semifinal. They've had a phenomenal year, again. And Missy Doherty's done an incredible job with that program. So the women's lacrosse team at Penn State has won their way to the national semifinal, where they'll take on Maryland in an all-Big Ten semifinal at Gillette Stadium in Foxborough. Yes, they'll play at the home of the Patriots. So that's where that will take place. Next, Penn State football. The first six-week session. There are 2 6-week sessions called summer session here at Penn State. The first six-week session is now getting underway. Penn State football has 84 players here. Now remember, you're saying, okay, 84, I thought there's over 100 players on the team. Remember, except for the four early entries, K.J. Hambler, Braylon Faison, Walton, Lamont Wade, and Mike Miranda, they came in early. And then the rest of them will join them. But right now, between scholarship and walk-ons, I've got 84 players here for the first six-week session. Now, this is the session where, you know, academics you can get done, individual workouts happen, group workouts happen, which they do on their own, and then there's the strength and conditioning component. They get 8 hours a week with them. And so, for all of you who have asked about, well, they're coming off a great year, they were young last year, do they have that drive and that desire? That should probably answer that question for you. That should probably have that. That question's probably now answered completely for you. That will do it. And that, that tells you something. I mean, we've got 84 guys here.
Well, the magic number we heard quite a bit during the dark days of this decade was, what, 85? And for you to say now 84 that are up there for summer session, that is phenomenal. That's terrific.
And that's before they even get the recruiting class in, which will come in the last week of June. It just tells you about the commitment that they understand they need to have that commitment to get it done. That tells me a lot. Basketball-wise, again, without the three freshmen, all the veterans, they never have everyone here during the first six-week session. They're all here. Now, some are here during the first six-week session. Sometimes it'll be six, seven, or eight, maybe. But then they're all here for the second six-week session, which starts at the end of June. Not this time. Every veteran is here for the first six-week session as well. So they'll be here for this one and the second one as well, which will then dovetail into that trip to the Bahamas, where they'll play three games, and that'll be in August. But that gives them extra practice time and so forth to make it all work. And I think that's just showing a dedication. Like, we don't want it, obviously, nobody wants collegiate sports to be a full-time job and so forth. I mean, but they're required. I mean, they're doing 8 hours a week. And then whatever they want to do. Let's face it, if you have pride in yourself, don't you want to get better at your game? You know, if you're Irvin Charles or Juwan Johnson, can you run enough routes and really have the offense ingrained in your mind? If you're Lamont Wade, can you do enough things working with the defense and working with a Grant Haley, for example, so that you're ready to go on day one? And if you're Tony Carr, and there's a part of your game you feel you need to work on, you want to be out there working on it. You're not forced to work on it. On your own time, you want to be out there working on it. I mean, look, football and basketball players happen to be their respective sports junkies. They love doing it. They love going out there and working on their game. A lot of self-motivation. You know, we talk about the self-motivation of a wrestler, which is phenomenal. Well, these guys have the same self-motivation. They want to make sure that they work on and improve their game. And this is where games are made. Games are made in the offseason. And when you got everybody together like that, that's all committed to doing the same thing, you don't have a straggler out there that's not there, not a part of it, that's a really big plus for your team. You know, because now you have an entire group that together is working to get better. And we talk about the winter program in football being so important. But this stretch between now and the end of June, Dwight Gall will tell you that's as tough a stretch as you get. It's not like the old days when I had dark hair. It's not like the old days where you got into camp and you're in some shape, but you really, I mean, you know, you really, camp really got you into shape. You're expected to walk in there in shape. And the way Penn State practices football, it is like being in a 2-hour conditioning drill. Because it is go, 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 go. James Franklin says if practice is done right, you don't need conditioning when it's over. You are doing it for the entire 2 hours. And he is right about that. That's one of the reasons why Penn State was such a great second half team last year. Okay? Physical conditioning, they were ready to go. Next half hour, Matt Leon will talk about the Sixers, the Eagles, and the Phillies. Joining us from KYW in Philadelphia. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. We're in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15 on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And the Purdy's have served this valley for decades. And when I mean serve the valley for decades, I mean they have served their customers for decades. They've taken great care of them. They find them the right insurance at the right price. And if there's a claim, they jump right in. And they carry a wide, wide array of insurance. You have to have a great rapport with your insurance agent. They are the pros' pros. It's Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Time now for our sports bozos of the day. The 14 and 15-year-olds that were arrested and appear to be the ones that tried to and actually did rob race car driver Scott Dixon, his wife, and Dario Franchitti. It usually makes it easier, just a helpful hint, to identify that you might be the potential robber when you have the credit cards and the IDs of the people with you. A message from this station and the Ad Council. What? All right, let's get to Matt Leon, KYW Philadelphia. Plenty of ground to cover, short period of time. Matt, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Great to be with you.
All right, let's start with the Phillies.
Do we have to?
Here's my issue. The schedule has not been kind to them early because what have they played? What they played 41 games so far? Only 16 have been at home. They're actually a .500 team at home, and of course they're way below the Mendoza line on the road. Is it just pure youth that they're a better home team, or is there something else?
I don't know. I think a lot of the problems, I don't know how much I would put into better home, better road. I just think they've got a lot of problems here. And in addition to that home road split you talk about, they've just played a lot of good teams. They've played Washington 12 times already in 41 games. They had another four-game series with the Cubs. They had a three-game series with the Dodgers. You know, they've only played a handful of mediocre teams, and, you know, so I don't know about – I don't know if I would put anything specifically about the youth better at home, better on the road, or worse on the road. They've got to get the bullpen figured out. That's the number one priority for me. They need to get that back end of the bullpen. I think one thing that's starting to help that is the last time through the rotation, you started to see the pitchers go deep again. Aaron Nola, even though they lost yesterday, Aaron Nola gave them seven great innings in his return from the DL. Hellickson was cruising on Friday night in Pittsburgh. His back stiffened up a little, but they still got six out of him. Eichhoff went six innings in his last start. If they can get back to what everyone thought they were going to be, where the starters get them six, seven, eight innings on a pretty consistent basis, I think they'll start to steady this ship here and get back to where, you know, people thought they could be close to 500. But that goes hand in hand with a bullpen that, they've struggled nailing down roles, frankly, because no one's been able to get anyone out consistently. So it's kind of been musical chairs there. But if they can get everything to kind of fall into place and get into a rhythm, I think they'll be able to turn things around here. But it has been a rough 3 weeks watching this team.
Yeah, and what is that doing for the fan base? Because I think they'd like to see some signs of life, and they aren't getting it right now.
Yeah, it's just it's not just, and not that you ever look good when you lose, but it's boring baseball in addition to being bad. You know, there's a lot of games where they're only down one or two runs as of late, but it feels like they're down 50. I think the fans are still patient, big picture, because they know there's a lot of talent, and you want to see young guys, you know, start to come together. But there's also, you'd like to see a win once in a while. And, you know, 4-17 in their last 21 doesn't cut it. And tonight they open a four-game series with Colorado, who's first in the National League West. But it is back home. As you mentioned earlier, they play better at home. And I just have a gut feeling that they're going to win 3 out of 4 in this series. And that's not based on anything matchup-wise. It's just kind of the way baseball works.
The Eagles, they have Darren Sproles, they have Wendell Smallwood, they've got Danelle Pumphrey, they've got Corey Clement, they've got Ryan Matthews, and they added in LeGarrette Blount. What did you think of that move?
I liked it. I don't think Ryan Matthews is going to be back here. I think they need Ryan Matthews to pass a physical at a certain point so they can cut him for next season. I don't think he figures into the picture at all. I like Blount. I like it because it's a one-year deal. It's, you know, short-term. I know everybody kind of raises their eyebrows whenever New England doesn't bring somebody back because they figure something's got to be wrong.
Yeah.
But he's a 30-year-old running back, and I think he was part of a committee in New England, and I think for the most part he'll be part of a committee here. I think he'll probably be the lead back, and by that I mean get the most carries. But obviously they're going to use Sproles, obviously. They're going to use Pumphrey, so you'll see a lot of different looks. But I thought it was low risk. You know, you bring in a guy who's kind of a known entity in the league. You know, he's a guy that if you need a yard, he's going to get you a yard. He's great near the goal line. You know, even if you only utilize him in short yardage, I think he'll be beneficial there. So I like the move. I think they've done a great job on paper of turning over the offense. We'll see how it all plays out, but I think on paper they've addressed their needs.
What is it? Is there any message at all that a lot of these moves were short-term solutions?
I think what you saw them do, they had a lot of holes, and they could only fill so many holes with long-term contracts that they felt comfortable with getting tied into and with draft picks. So I think what you saw with a lot of these short-term deals is they were able to kind of push the goal line down the road a year where they can get through this year, be competitive, maybe even be plus at a certain position, but it gives them another year to try to find a long-term solution. Like, I think specifically with Alshon Jeffrey, I think there's a possibility he could be the long-term solution wide receiver. But if he's not, it gives him an all-pro caliber at that wide receiver until one of the drafted receivers or they figure out somebody else long-term. Same thing with Blount. Is he a superstar? Is he going to run for 1,100 yards here? I don't think so. But he'll be a serviceable NFL starter caliber running back that'll allow them to get through the season, and then maybe it gives you another offseason where maybe running back in this draft was fifth on the depth chart as far as things they needed to address. Maybe next year it's second, and you're able to get a long-term guy in here. So I think that's the approach. I think a lot of it is capology, too. They're really dancing through a lot of pinholes here trying to keep the cap straight, and I think we'll see some interesting moves as training camp gets closer with maybe clearing off some salary and such. But the Eagles have won the offseason many times over the last decade or so, and it hasn't translated into the fall. But I think the thing you've got to appreciate is they had holes. They've done a reasonable, judicious amount of work to fill those holes on paper, and now you see how it comes together.
Sidney Jones, we've talked about him before. He will not be able to, maybe the first six games wouldn't be available to them. I first of all, I think it's a great pick as a pick. And number two, I think I like the fact that they understand that life is more than just your rookie year. To me, that showed savvy making that pick.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, Achilles are tricky, so you don't ever want to say, you know, that it's a slam dunk he's going to come back. But right. You've seen guys come back from similar injuries, so it's not crazy to think that. And if he comes back, then all of a sudden, you know, even if he misses all of this year, which I think a lot of people are anticipating,
right.
then they've gotten two top 15 picks in one draft. You know, because Barnett was picked right around where everybody thought he was going to be. And until he got hurt, Jones was almost universally, from what I saw, the top cornerback or one of the top two cornerbacks. Right. So I think long term, I think it was probably one of those where they looked at the board who was left at, I think it was at 43, and he just kind of looked up, and he was just so far ahead of everyone else, it was almost too much to turn down the value at that spot. So I think they think they've got themselves the possibility of a lockdown corner for 10 years. Yes, he might miss this year, but no one will remember he missed this year, you know, three, 4 years from now.
The Achilles is normally, I'd say, to be effective again about a year and a half. You can come back after a year, you know, but you're maybe 80% in terms of speed, jump, anything like that. But then once you clear that year and a half barrier, at that point, you're back to 100%. You can play. I mean, you can play, and with the right rehab, you can really move.
Yeah, and I don't think they are going to be in any hurry to push him, regardless of how. And he kind of, when he spoke to the media before rookie minicamp, he was kind of pumping the brakes on some people were saying possibility of end of October, and he was like, "Oh, I don't really know about that." So I think you kind of get the feeling that everyone is anticipating him sitting out this year, and I would be with that until he is absolutely 100%. This is not a Super Bowl team. You know, it is maybe a borderline playoff team if things fall right and a lot of things come together. But I wouldn't risk long-term, let him get healthy, and then you might have a lockdown corner for the next 5-10 years.
One Sixers question, and then we'll let you go, and that deals with Ben Simmons. Does anybody read into the fact he's not playing Summer League?
No, I think they're just probably being cautious. He did play summer league last year.
He did. Yes.
They probably got a. I think they saw what they needed to see. I think there's very little concern that he's going to be able to fit in. It's just getting him absolutely healthy and 100% ready to go. So I don't read anything into that as to any kind of setback any further. I think it's more just wanting to make sure that when they throw it up to start the season that he's completely healthy, because it should be an interesting ride this year for the Sixers. I feel like I've said ad nauseum, if they're healthy, but if they're healthy, that's going to be a really fun team to watch, regardless of who they add in the draft with that three pick.
Yeah, and no offense to anybody picked, including the father of a certain pick, the Sixers already have the rookie of the year for 17-18. His name's Ben Simmons.
They already
got the rookie of the year.
Yeah.
Hey, always a pleasure, my friend. Great to hear you. And have a great Memorial Day weekend, by the way.
You too. Thank you so much.
All right. Matt Leon, KYW Philadelphia. We will come back with more in a moment. Brought to you by Purdy Insurance on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Great to have you with us. on the show today. Our thanks to Dan Baker, the legendary public address announcer, Philadelphia Phillies. He's right now, as we speak, getting ready for the Colorado Rockies at Citizens Bank Park, which you'll hear right here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, your home for the Philadelphia Phillies. Our thanks to Bob Grove, many years on the Penguins radio network, as we talked about the Penguins and their run to now a 3-2 lead in the Eastern Conference final of the Stanley Cup playoffs. And our thanks to Matt Leon, KYW in Philadelphia, as we discussed the Phillies, the Eagles, and the Sixers. Tomorrow on the show, Alan Bestwick on the Indianapolis 500. You know, we talked about Scott Dixon being robbed at a Taco Bell, but that aside, he also put together the fastest qualifying run in 21 years at the Old Brickyard. 2:32+, fastest since Ari Leyendyke was over 2:36 back in 1996. So we'll talk to Alan Bestwick tomorrow. He'll have the play-by-play call of the Indy 500 on ABC. And also Tony Knopp, the CEO of Spotlight Ticket Management. We'll talk about the business of sports tomorrow. And on Wednesday, John Kruk will join us from the Phillies TV network. Then no show on Thursday, stop the rejoicing. And then back on Friday, leading into Memorial Day weekend, which includes my brother who got married on Saturday.
Yeah. Send him a good luck on Saturday morning. And I was kind of concerned with the reply. As we were counting down to your darling daughter's wedding in early June.
Yeah.
And he said he's looking forward to dancing the bunny hop. And I'm thinking, okay, you're in the backyard over the weekend. Was there something missing with your nuptials and celebration? Was the bunny hop missing?
Well, let me put it to you this way.
Right.
It was in the backyard with a justice of peace. There wasn't a lot of hoopla around it. I mean, I don't think they hired a DJ or a band. Yeah, I don't think that happened.
Although I think any time he hits it big playing the play slots on his laptop, he probably does the bunny hop.
Yeah, he probably does.
He pulls in another 3 billion credits.
Well, he was telling us the other day how lucky he is. I just want to tell you how lucky she is. He's a great guy. So he is a great guy. And, in fact, the two of you will be seated at the same table.
Oh, wonderful.
As a matter of fact, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, it's in the hallway, but I mean, it's
Well, there was talk of you possibly sneaking down the hall when the Belmont starts, since it's on June 10th. So if it's
closer to the TV. I will be. Believe me, I will be. Yeah, Mr. Girardi has not yet decided as to what to do. Obviously, work will dictate what he has to do.
Well, since we don't have a Triple Crown contender, I don't know if that increases his chances of being there for the big day.
We'll see.
Although he did predict right. You know,
he said the day after the Kentucky Derby, he called me up and he said that horse is not winning the Preakness.
Boy, he ran out of gas.
Yeah, I mean, big time. I mean, you want to talk about fading. It looked like the suit at a track meet. Why? What's so funny? And that's just him watching.
Right.
I'm tired. All right, really? Where is the suit today? It's out?
I did see him. I was just coming back into the office after a lunch break, and he was at the front desk.
That doesn't sound good.
No, he was not taking phone calls or anything like that. He was talking to Sammy at the front desk. And
while I admire the versatility,
Swiss Army knife. But, no, he was. he opened up the box of a brand new Microsoft tablet, one of those new Surface Pro tablets. And it's like, oh, look at you. Huh. Christmas came early, Mr. Apple. What's going on? You going? You crossing over to the dark side? And he said, "But this is pretty slick."
I'm sure in his digital media world that he was able to procure two more of those.
Yeah. Well, no? He does have to be very well versed when it comes to both the iOS stuff and, of course, the other products that are out there.
Sure. Yeah. All right. Great. And in fact, for me to know a little bit more about baseball, I should go to the World Series. All right. Yeah, do it. I think I need to know more about football. I think I'll go to the Super Bowl. Okay. Have the company pay for it. Oh, my goodness. Oh, well. Well, the...
Yeah, but I know he'll be looking forward to seeing you tomorrow, but I promise off the record I won't give him your entrance time. So.
Or my exit time.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I may be done at 3:12 depending on what he does.
Scranton people will be like, "Oh, well, we needed you at a certain time of not this early."
No, I'm here. I'm here. What made you leave early? It's all right. It's just I had time. Tomorrow's show is going to be a good one. Alan Bestwick tomorrow, Tony Knopp tomorrow, John Kruk on Wednesday, Phillies game on Thursday, and my brother and some fun going into the Memorial Day weekend on Friday. That's fun. That's a big week, and you're not even done scheduling for the week. I'm sure you'll come up with somebody.
Oh, we got a few more irons in the fire we're going to be working on, and of course, already looking to peg down some interviews early June for the Belmont. Of course, we'll have DJ on and Lafine Pinkay.
Yes, you know what? He's got a great voice.
Very cool he was up there on the champion stage there the last couple of races there across from Bob Costas. He was excellent.
Yeah. Lafitte Pinkay III is somebody that he worked the Pennsylvania Derby last year with Dick. And Dick has a lot of respect for him. That's all I needed to know. As soon as Dick told me, because we talked about this last year at the Pennsylvania Derby, I thought, well, if Dick respects this guy, that's a guy we need to have on. Our thanks to Matt Leon, KYW in Philadelphia, Bob Grove for the Penguins, and also Dan Baker, the legendary voice of Citizens Bank Park, for joining us on the show today, brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com.
Your home for the Phillies. News Radio 1070 WKOK and WKOK.com. This is WKOK Sunbury.